Hello and welcome to episode 457 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser, and you can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. Hopefully you had great weekends. Although we are recording on a Tuesday and not a Monday. Sorry.
It was a good weekend. Yeah, I did the Phil Rosenthal interview at the Carnegie Music Hall of Homestead, I think that's what it's called. And that went really well. And it was super fun. And he told celebrity stories and stuff. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Good.
Getting a lot of good pictures from Megan's mom.
Yeah. My entourage was my mom and my friend Kat, who came with me. And I felt pretty cool, like walking in with like, this is my entourage.
Fantastic. I wish I had an entourage.
Sure you do. It's us.
Yeah.
Yes, but we're never in the same spot.
That's true. But we would be if we were. We would be your entourage if we were in the same spot. That's very sweet. We're in your squad, Clarence. We're in your squad.
You are in my squad. Yeah. Anyway, I'm actually traveling for work right now, so I'm in New England, and I've been having lots of fun experiences trying to replicate that very specific New England accent. You know, yeah. like Blinka, ah.
Blinka, ah,
and Stadies, and gotta go too fast on the in your car because you gotta use your Blinka. Although we massholes, we never use our Blinka, and the Stadies always, we gotta. Can't get pulled over by the Stadies.
It's like, bad, actually.
I work with a lot of Bostonians. Massholes. Call themselves massholes, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not you calling them that. That's what they call themselves.
No, not at all. I just, it makes me think that I've stepped into that old Saturday Night Live, well, it's not too old, but that Saturday Night Live commercial with Casey Affleck, where he works, he goes, yeah. And he's like, I'm not smoking in here, Mark.
I love that one.
Yeah.
I also love his Dunkin' Donuts. Is that what you're, that one?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. the double tap vanilla latte.
And yes. I love that. He was really good on that episode.
He really was. And it is, and I think it's so popular because it speaks to so many Bostonians. And I will say that because they have said, I know those people.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true. Anyway, speaking of Saturday Night Live, our favorite listener, Rick, mentioned that we should talk about Saturday Night Live more often since it's on an uptick. He actually suggested that we review every episode. I'm not sure that we'll go that far, but maybe we should talk about Saturday Night Live a little bit more since it does seem to be back in pop culture again. It's particularly after what I consider one of the best episodes they put on in 20 years with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that Beavis and Butthead. I watched it again. It's so funny.
It is really funny.
Yeah. It's always an election year. They always, even the lead up to election. So I don't need that. I don't need election Saturday Night Live coverage because, it's really exhausting. But maybe, I don't know, maybe the energy's up, people. I don't know.
We will certainly revisit. I think that it's new again this weekend with Dua Lipa singing and acting.
I'm excited her new album comes out Friday.
Is it this Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. All right, so this week we are talking about Netflix's newest and I would argue totally unexpected sensation, Baby Reindeer, which is based off of the one-man show by Richard Gadd, who also stars in this Netflix adaptation, based on events, very traumatic and troubling events that happened to him throughout his life. And he basically took lemons and made lemonade made a what I would consider a really great show that has captivated a lot of people. And I was reading, actually, just before we started recording, I was reading the numbers, and it was something like it had like 1.3 million streams the first week, and then it like got the second week, it was like 13 million streams, and the third week it was 2 million streams. So these kinds of things don't happen very often, and we can talk about what that means later once we kind of get through the our overview of the show. I will say, and I don't know if you guys would agree, I will say it's best to go into this with a blind sort of thing. I mean, I think mostly it's best to go into shows blind anyway, but I think in this particular case, if you go in knowing certain justifications or certain actions are coming, then I think I think it benefits from the shock. It benefits from the sort of what the hell am I watching? Where is this going kind of atmosphere? So I would say if you haven't seen the show, probably don't listen to this episode just yet. Massive spoilers will happen here. Come back to it after you do watch the show. It's not very long. It's 7 episodes. They're like a half an hour piece. So it's not a significant time commitment, but I would urge people to go into it blind. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that would probably be the best way to go about. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's been a lot of like news stories and stuff about it and like how people are talking about it. I think at least this year, maybe last year too, we're the water cooler podcast. This does feel like a water cooler type show. I watched the trailer and I didn't actually, I don't like the trailer because I think the trailer, I watched it before it even dropped. I was like, okay, that looks okay. And then I didn't remember a lot of it. And then I when I heard that people were like obsessing over it, I was able to get into it. But yeah, it's a really easy watch, I think.
I think the obsessions are generally, and again, we can talk about this after we talk about the show. I think the obsession is generally coming from a need for people to consume things that aren't programmed for them. Like, so many television shows are adaptations of something else, or they're designed to win Emmys, or, you know,
they're like an IP. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't mean that they're bad. It's just, it's not exciting. It's not excitement, you know, the same way that something like last year, Jury Duty was, which I would compare this to, not in terms of tone, but in terms of impact.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about.
Okay, so we've already given you a warning, listeners, so we're going to be spoiler heavy on this. So, Joey, why don't you tell us about Baby Reindeer? What's going on in Baby Reindeer?
Sure. So Richard Gadd plays Johnny. He is a bartender in Camden who is an aspiring comedian. And the whole story gets set into motion when he sees a woman come into the bar and sits at the bar, and she looks really distraught. She looks sad, and he says, I think the voiceover says, I felt bad for her. I admit it. I felt bad for her. And he was like, I know that sounds, I can't think of the right word, but condescending. But he was like, I did feel bad for her. So he learns that this woman's name is Martha. She tells him that she is a super successful lawyer. And just a simple act of kindness of giving her a cup of tea because she said she couldn't afford it, turns into an obsession on her part, we realize at first, where she finds his email address and she starts emailing him nonstop, and she comes into the pub every day, despite the fact, she's clearly lying about being a successful lawyer. And it's sort of about how niceties can harmless, seemingly harmless flirtation can lead to somebody accepting it in the wrong way or taking it a wrong way. And she begins to stalk him. The authorities don't take him seriously. And it's sort of about how he is He's not obsessed with her, but I think he's fascinated with her, and I think he's an empathetic person. And then we learn a lot of things about his personal life and a lot of his personal trauma, and it's sort of about them going back and forth with one another. So that's the gist, I guess.
Yeah, one thing that I really loved about this show, and I think it is a great television show. I think it's probably one of the best things I've seen this year. But and one of the reasons I love that is that, you know, I think the story about the stalking is good, but what makes it great is that there is a secondary plot, maybe not secondary, but there's a mirror plot where Richard Gadd, playing Donnie Dunn, analyzes why this is happening, why he let it go on, why he made the choices that he did. It isn't just about, oh my God, I can't believe he made such bad choices. He actually, it's almost like it's meta in that he's saying, I too don't know why I made those choices, and here's why I think I did. And he goes back, and there's a lot of detail about his personal life. There's a lot of detail about his personal flaws. There's a lot of, you know, he is not blameless in the situation, even though clearly, you know, it's just such a complex relationship here. And I think that's what makes it great in my mind. Megan, what did you think?
I probably am more, it wasn't a slam dunk for me. Like so many people were like calling it a masterpiece and stuff. I think it's doing a lot of really amazing things. I think the conversations it's bringing up are so interesting. And I think that, you know, even the way with how, like, because the points are like, why is he doing what he's doing? But you're like, you know, this is trauma happening, you know, on screen. The way he deals with this trauma is so fascinating. And I think very real and raw. I struggle with some things like, this is one show that I feel like I would have liked to have seen the play. I feel like the play would have, because it does very much feel, it's very talky. The narration is almost revealing too much at points where I'm like, oh, I kind of wanted to figure that out for myself, or I kind of wanted to fill in those blanks myself. But I think that, I also think this is just me, but I would have loved for it to be one of those shows where there's an episode where you are in the point of view of Terry, or you're in the point of view of Martha Scott, where it kind of like, and I know that's not the show, but I felt like there were things that I really wanted to learn more about those characters. And I know it's from his point of view, but I almost felt like that would have been interesting. That was just like something that I really wanted to learn more about those two and how they relate to him and seeing like a day in their life from their point of view. But I also, the other thing I struggled with was like, as a comedian, is this particular character funny? Like, is in this world, like, is Donnie Dunn supposed to be successful in this? Like, do people just not think he's funny? I struggle a little bit with that because, you know, since we're getting into spoiler territory, I'm not going to care about this, but he does a lot of bad things. Like, he's just bad on stage. And during his last performance, he like basically reveals everything about himself, goes viral, and then becomes a comedian from that experience, even though he was not particularly funny. Like, I just struggled with that, how that all worked out. But I think what this show is doing is very interesting in terms of, you know, showcasing trauma, especially for a man. Like, I think that's really revolutionary too, that, you know, we see this, a lot of shows like this from a female point of view, and it's really disheartening to see that, you know, he's not believed as a man with the police either about this person who's stalking him. But I think it's doing a lot of interesting things. It doesn't all quite come together for me personally, but I really think that I can see why people are really fascinated by it too. Because it also bravely, like, he makes mistakes. He talks about his feelings and is kind of putting it all out there, which I think is really, really interesting.
You know, I think in terms of his comedy, I mean, I think he's only funny. I think the show intends to say that he's only funny when he's sort of autobiographical, when he's not doing a canned shtick with the props, because the props just aren't funny. I mean, there is one that I laughed at because it was so bad. It was the the teapot, the Here's a Little Teapot.
There was one after that that I laughed at too. I thought, like, I actually am like, oh, if I would have been in the, I would have laughed at all of his jokes. I like prop stuff. Like, I don't think he's not funny. His, but I feel like everyone around him, there's nobody who's like, hey, you've got talent, kid, other than that who shall not be named, I guess. But like, who I'm not even sure, I didn't believe he was, his groomer, who I don't even think is actually, is he actually a television writer? I don't even know. I didn't actually think he was.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Oh, the guy who,
Darian.
Yes.
Darian. Yeah.
Oh, is he a real life television writer?
I don't think he was.
I don't know. I think, you mean you didn't think he actually was in the show?
I didn't think that the guy who abuses him.
Yeah.
Are you talking about, is he based on a real life?
No, I was talking about, is he actually a television writer or is he just catfishing him?
Oh no.
No, he recognizes the name. So I think it.
Okay. I thought maybe he was just a catfisher or somebody like that.
Oh, I didn't read it as that.
Going back to your point about, I mean, I think, you know, it would be nice to have the stories rounded out a bit with the women in his life. But I think particularly with Martha, the character played by Tess Dunning, who is the stalker in this case, I think, yes, it would be nice to be able to see more about her and kind of, I mean, we do get glimpses of her life through his eyes. All of this is told, most of this is told through his eyes, but I think he balances a very, very delicate line here with her, with the treatment of that character, because you can just, you know, you can imagine a scenario where a lot of people look at this and say, oh, you're making fun of her because she's overweight. Oh, you're making fun of her because she's crazy. Well, of course, you know, she's a crazy woman, like a Fatal Attraction kind of thing. And then if he were to go in and try to imagine her world,
right,
her life, that would be, I think, even more problematic. The fact that he keeps it to his perspective, I think, helps him, because I'm not sure that he is equipped to go into that territory.
And that's probably true. And that's why, that's just me being like, there are some gaps there that, like, especially since the actress herself, like, kind of just disappears for like three episodes, I feel like. And even though she's technically there, I just found her, that character, so fascinating. And, you know, the fact that she was a lawyer and, you know, she had to have channeled all this energy into doing something. And then what happened? It's just tragic. And, but I totally get that it had to be like through his point of view, but I'm just thinking about, you know, liberties with the play versus this, and how, what I would have liked to have seen. Cause even like, I also would have liked to have known, like, there were some things like, I like the way they deal with Terry. But I feel like when we first meet him, he says something like, she's the woman of my dreams. And he doesn't necessarily say like why. And I kind of wanted to know, like, you know what, cause he meets all these other people. And what I would have liked to have known, what, maybe that's something that he's dealing with, is, you know, is figuring out his sexual, which I found that fascinating too. The way that, you know, in a way, Martha Scott helps him figure out a lot of things in his life, including like, well, the groomer helped him figure out that maybe he was bi, I think is what he was thinking. And then, which is terrible that that's what it took but then Martha Scott took him, like, to figure out other things about himself. It's just, there are a lot of fascinating things that it does. I guess I'm going on a tangent, but I do find it fascinating the way that trauma, the trauma that happens to him helps him work through other trauma. It's just kind of strange like that. But I also would have liked to have seen him more of like a flashback to him when he was younger too.
I think that would have.
They do that. I can't remember if they do that or not.
I felt like that would. Why would you want to see that? I'm curious.
Me? Why would I want to see it? Just to like kind of learn like more about his family. Like when we learn about his family, I'm like, oh, he's got this family that really cares about him and is supportive. Because for so much of it, it makes it feel like he's not supported. But that's also part of, like, you know, isolation and dealing with it. I just would have been curious about what he would have been like as a kid, if he recognized things in himself that were different. That's just me being like I said, it's just me wanting more out of the story because it is so fascinating.
Yeah, I actually looked him up. I read about him a little bit on Wikipedia and found out that he was, you know, the way that it's he draw, and of course it's not a docuseries, right? It's not
right.
It is drawn from his personal life. These things did happen to him, but not every single thing in there is you know, there's a lot of liberties taken. He comes across as somebody who just has nothing and has no connections and is just really struggling and just wants to be famous. But in real life, Richard Gadd actually went to the Oxford School of Drama. So
it would just surprise me when we meet his parents. It's like, oh, I thought he had like no help at all, no support, which probably adds to the story in some way too. But that was just my thoughts.
Yeah, I think it helps just in terms of the story, and Joey, Megan, and I have been going on, and definitely want you to jump in here, but I think it helps in terms of the story if he is isolated.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He doesn't have anybody to rely on. He doesn't have anybody to fall back on. He doesn't have any help in terms of how to deal with anything that is going on in his life. He's keeping it all into himself. He's being very stoic about the things that happened to him, and it manifests itself in very negative ways, and it was... You know, I love that he goes back to the moment where he saw her in the bar, and before he knew anything about her, it was her laugh that he found.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's a, like, almost like it's a ray of sunshine in his very, very dark life. And he was, that's why he was so drawn to her, is because she on the surface was a very, you know, became a very bubbly person. I guess he immediately forgot that she came in looking like she was going to kill herself. But, it's so emotionally provocative and complex and unexpectedly so. Cause it, you know, at first I thought this was going to be a misery thing. And Jalal was the one that keyed me into this and said, oh, it's so funny because she sends text messages through and pretends that she has an iPhone and she doesn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's, you know, and, you know, certainly, you know, that's just what he was telling me about it. I don't think he'd seen the whole thing yet, but, it just surprised me at how deep it goes. Joey, what did you think?
I kind of love it. I'm shows don't typically make, like, when people are like, oh my God, it's so cringy. Like, stuff like that doesn't really strike me in that way. Like, I don't become uncomfortable very easily when it comes to like awkward situations in movies and TV, as much as other people openly do. But the whole thing made me uncomfortable. The whole show, like in a good way. Like it was, because I was actually a little surprised by how quickly it moved in terms of the plot. And like by the end of the first episode, she's already emailing him and essentially sinking her hooks into him. And I think the end of the first episode, he confirms her Facebook request. Yeah. And I was a little surprised. I was like, oh, this is going really fast. I love all the stuff with Terry. Why am I blanking on her name? Nava Mao, I think her name is.
Yes.
I think she is a really sort of great opposite of everything that Donnie is seeing and experiencing. And she's, it's interesting that both of the women in his life in the show are sort of not like encouraging necessarily, but they both give him different things while their intentions or motives are very similar. And how he reacts to both of them is very fascinating to me. I loved how the longest episode is, I think, is episode 4, and it's the sort of the biggest detour when we learn about Donnie's trauma. I thought that was very interesting too, but that was the one episode I was like, all right, where is this going? I think I just had to be patient because all the other episodes were like 28 minutes, 32 minutes. I do agree that I think it's a very complex. It's very meaty material, and I'm sorry, but Jessica Gunning's, just her face, the way that it can like morph from one second to the other, from pure anger and frustration and hatred to you pitying her, I think is fascinating. She's like a really, I think, a huge find, I think, from the show. So anything that comes her way, please. I was really into it. I watched it over a day and a half. So I mean, it's a very easy watch in my opinion. I'm excited to see more people talk about it. I imagine this is a show where we're going to get a lot of, I'll say think pieces, but I think a lot of people are going to react very strongly to this, and we're probably going to be reading about it at least until the summer is over.
I agree. And I don't think all of those opinions are going to, I think eventually some people are going to come back and say, you know, it's unfair to portray her this way because we don't know anything about her. I do fully anticipate that dialogue to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I just, even as I was watching it, I was like, boy, the way that certain shots are set up to just, you know, she's, you know, with showing her full physicality and kind of how it's just put out there, and it's not satirized. It's not making fun of it, but it's, you could, some people could look at it and see it that way. And it just, so much of it is uncomfortable. Like, it's just so clearly a situation that we are eavesdropping in on. And it's just not a world in which we, want to be.
Yeah. You know, I do want to say something that I kept thinking the whole time. I'm very interested in to see how, we are now in an age where we can talk about mental health in a more complex and nuanced way. Great. I think it is very interesting that you have these two main characters who are both are dealing with their own mental health and their own trauma with a lot of things. And I'm going to be very fascinated to see how some people talk about characters now, and in terms of what they do defines who they are. I'm very interested to see the conversations around that and see how that all plays out, because I found myself, since we're fully openly talking about the show, in episode 6, when she sits at the bar and she refuses to leave.
Yeah.
And
the glass in his face.
The mm-hmm. fight happens. Like, I felt really bad when he punches her.
Yeah.
I like cheered. Because I don't know, it was just sort of like and not just that, like the whole thing, like that whole fight, the way that I reacted naturally to that fight, I felt, it's another instance of seeing her face falling to what he's about to say. That whole, I mean, I could interview the editor for 20 minutes just on that sequence, because I would want to talk to him about that, because it is like, what does he do? She hits him first, I think.
Yes.
And then he punches her back, and she gets dragged out of there. I'm very interested to see how some people, I think maybe this is not meant to sound condescending, but I'm curious to see how some younger people react to just these two characters and how the show ends. I'm eager to hear about it. And I'm also a little like, I don't know if I want to hear about it.
I do love the ending. I think the ending is really strong.
I do too.
And, just tragic, like in so many ways. It almost feels like, you mean we could have been friends this whole time? It feels like very like Baby Jane almost. Like,
whatever happened to Martha Scott?
Yeah, I think I think that's probably what people are responding to is this gray area of this character that you kind of at points are like, what are you doing to both of them, you know, obviously to her, but to him too. You're like, what are you doing? Like, I think it's fascinating. His response to her is very fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's, and that's what I love about it. It's not cut and dry. He's not the hero. She's not the villain. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hate her unmeasured in an unmeasured way. He has complex emotions about her. And I think it's probably, that's really kind of what gets to the core of what I love about the show, is that it is willing to explore the nuances of this situation.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sending you both a meme that I just saw on Twitter about the show. I think it is the 30 Rock joke. Okay, send it to you.
But let me take a look. It's let's talk about, sorry, was there anything else you wanted to contribute in terms of
no
show itself? You guys?
No, I'm good.
No, I think I hope that I come across as not hating the show, because I don't hate this show by any means. I just, I think it never helps when people hype it up so much that that your expectations are different. But I think this story, I think I was hoping for a little more, maybe just a little more, maybe my expectations were different, that I think the story is so fascinating. I think what it's doing for so many individuals, like in stories, is really, like, I was thinking about how it really is, it's hitting on a lot of, even taboos, I'd say, in some ways. And I think I really like that the conversations that it starts.
I agree. So do you think then that this show has a place at the Emmy table? Is this year's jury duty where it gets some quote unquote surprise nominations?
I feel like it definitely has a shot.
I think as long as people keep discovering it like that, I mean, it's a limited series, so I feel like everybody that is a contender at limited series has the same problem, as I still just want that to be 7 or 8 slots. I think it's super buzzy, and I feel like if it carries over into the summer, especially after the window closes at the end of next month, I think, because originally I was just like, all right, guys, when I think I saw somebody was like, all right, let's crash the Emmy race. I was like, no one has seen it. No one knows anything yet. Like, stop talking in these, like, I don't know. For some reason I was more skeptical, but I think after finishing it and seeing how people are probably going to keep talking about it, I say yes. And I would say, as of right now, I would say yes, it's in. But then in terms of other things, I think she is in more than he is in.
I would say that too. And then I feel like maybe for like a direction nod for episode 4, I feel like maybe. Or maybe a writing nod.
Well, he wrote the whole show.
Right.
So he would be, it would be a single nomination.
Oh, so it would be, so a single nomination. Okay. So, so maybe a writing nod for him.
I
can see that.
I actually would love to see him get in as act. I agree with you guys. I think she is, you know, she's the more buzz about person, but I think I think he's doing such complex things here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I do too.
He's not just playing himself. So I would love to see him get nominated, but it's a difficult year for that. So
it's a difficult show too. That's the other thing we have to think about. It's like, I know you said it was bingeable. I had a rough time watching it because it was just like, oh, after that 4th episode,
I was
just like, I have to stop. Like, it's, you know, it's hard to watch, and it's, you know, gut wrenching. And I wonder if people will have a hard time, if you know, the Academy will have a hard time, you know, getting through this whole thing.
I think there's something about like every episode, like ending though. I think it's the kind of show, while it is very heavy, especially that fourth episode. I think that's a big hurdle for some people. Not saying it's bad, it's just that it's a lot emotionally to deal with. I think going into episode five, since it goes back to the more of the story that it is telling, I think it hooks people back in. And by the end of episode five, and like the camera's panning away and you hear the parents over the voicemail, I think if you get to episode five, you're in for the long haul. You just need to see how it ends. And I think it's that kind of show where I think it's exciting to people to be like, oh my God, what happens next? Oh my God, what happens next?
Yeah.
So I think people could probably watch it in like, I mean, I binged it because I had to, but I mean like the I think people will probably break this up into two parts, but finish it very quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, people watch challenging things all the time. It's just, it's so funny to me that people can watch shows like, as much as I love it, like Fargo, where people just get brutally murdered all the time. But anytime you happen upon something like this, that, you know, touches on things that we don't talk about. We don't talk about survivors of sexual assault. We don't talk about sexual assault on men. You know, these are uncomfortable things. And I agree with you guys. People are going to have a lot of have challenges with this, but we can watch something like Fargo where people are just shot in the face, and that's okay. Right. We can laugh at that, but we can't talk about something that happens in real life to people and affects people every single day because that's too tough. But I'm not saying you're wrong, or it's certainly.
No. And I don't know. Like, I could be completely wrong, because there've been shows where I'm like, oh, there's no way that they're going to respond to this. And then they do. But then it was like, other shows where you're like, oh, they didn't go for this at all. It's just, it's weird that people, you know, they have, who knows, but I do think it's definitely in the conversation, and definitely, you know, I don't think it's crashing the Emmys. I think it's just here. Like,
Go ahead, Joey.
I think, Clarence, I read your piece, and I think you're very right that it's just like there is a little bit of fatigue. Clarence wrote a piece about the sort of baby reindeer sort of entering the race very unexpectedly. And I think that is very true about there are all these expected contenders, returning contenders, returning series, whatever, but then you have something that people are like eager to talk about. I think it is shaking it up a little bit, even though this is limited and not like drama and stuff. You know what I mean?
Something organic.
Yeah.
Not
it's program. Definitely fun to like, one of my friends told me about it before I even knew that, you know, film Twitter or TV Twitter was onto it. And he told me that it was really hard to watch, but to give it a shot. So it was like something on my radar before it kind of blew up. And, but it seems like it happened so fast too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's catching on like wildfire. I mean, those numbers, mm-hmm. those numbers, that's insane. But I think its biggest hurdle is not necessarily going to be the subject matter. It's going to be the fact that Netflix, I don't think they have a campaign for this. I don't think they knew it was coming. I mean, obviously they knew it was coming, but I think there was just an import that they were going to air a show they dropped it on a Thursday. They're focusing on Ripley right now, and maybe all that we cannot see. And then all of a sudden they've got baby reindeer. And, you know, it may be the kind of thing that it dies behind because they don't have something to put behind it, or it may be the thing that they can't, you know, in spite of themselves, it does well.
So I will say, speaking of that, I think they might be taking it more seriously now, because I sort of prescribed to like a studio's FYC site to see like what they have in the front or at the top of their thing. The way that Netflix FYC site works is you have all the contenders, and like, say you click on a category. I'm not kidding. A couple hours ago today, they have like bigger images, I'm assuming, of shows and movies that they want to push harder, but then they have all the other contenders listed as smaller, like icons or thumbnails that you can click on to see like what they're doing. Earlier today, all they had at the top was All the Light We Cannot See, Griselda and Ripley. And I just clicked on it again, and they moved Baby Reindeer from the bottom to the top.
Wow.
So it's up there with they didn't move any of those shows down, but they elevated Baby Reindeer up to the like bigger quote unquote spot. But I will say, if you click on it and you can see the category consideration, they don't have any of the actors listed. It just says outstanding limited or anthology series. Where all the other shows are like makeup, production design, this person, actor this, supporting that, for all the other shows.
Interesting. I hope that changes.
Me too.
Well, at least it gives us something to something exciting in the Emmy race. Not that it's not exciting, but you know, something like I said, something different, something original, something organic that doesn't feel programmed. It's just a something somebody wants to share with the world as part of his own healing. Very compelling.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Megan, why don't you go first?
I am looking forward to, I do want to see the Fall Guy. I do want to see Challengers. I am catching up on lots of television. I'm excited for Dua Lipa's new album. And what else is coming? Is there anything? I'm probably missing stuff. I want to see The Idea of You. I really want to see that. There's a lot of stuff coming out this week. And that's probably it for now.
Joey?
I just clicked on to see what is coming into the theaters near me, and that Johnny Depp movie is coming. That Jean Dubarry, that I can't remember who directed it, but it's his the movie that he made where he plays King Louis. I'm not looking forward to that. I just thought it was funny. I am looking to finish this fucking Drag Race book that I've been reading forever, and I'm going to start Edmund White's The Humble Lover. I want to catch up with Gerard Carmichael's reality show. I want to watch the John Mulaney My Next Guest thing, or the Netflix thing that he is coming out on Friday. And then there's a show that I thought looked kind of cute and harmless that debuted this past week, but I didn't get a chance to watch the screeners on Netflix. It's called Dead Boy Detectives.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like. I've so far like really liked the design and the look of it. It's created by Steve Yockey, who is the creator of The Flight Attendant. So I feel like that's right up my alley. And it looks like it has two cute, twink, somewhat gay people in it. So, woo. Gay.
So easy to please.
Yeah, I know.
That's all right. You good?
Yep.
I too am interested in the Fall Guy. I forgot. This is why I don't want to seem like old man yelling at clouds, but I really hate streaming movies because I forget that things like that Anne Hathaway movie comes out on Thursday on Amazon Prime where I can watch it for free.
Yeah.
I just completely forgot it was coming out this week. So thank you for reminding me, Megan, because I also want to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm actually going to go to the theater to see this, but I feel like I must say that Saturday is May the 4th, and it's May the 4th be with you, and they're re-releasing The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, because 25th anniversary, and God, don't I feel
it. What?
Yeah, and I might go see that. I don't know. I'm going to be by myself on Saturday because my wife is gone and my daughter has a life of her own and a driver's license. So she takes the car and goes wherever she wants. But I also have a lot of homework to do. And that homework comes in the form of Netflix's Three Body Problem and Showtime's A Gentleman in Moscow, of which I have interviews coming up. So I have to watch those not short series very quickly. So probably won't see a 25-year-old movie that I've seen four or five times already in the theater. But we'll see. There was something else that was on TV. Oh, Hacks starts its third season on Sunday, and I've seen the first two episodes. And Gene Smart, is it Thursday? is it Thursday or Friday? Maybe it's Friday. It's coming out this weekend. Jean Smart is giving Ayo Edebiri a run for her money. I think she's doing series best work in this season so far. First two episodes are
fantastic. That's high praise.
And they give her I think that they're giving her a really great subplot in that she, a friend of hers runs a late night show, like a Jay Leno or a Letterman kind of thing. And he retires and he gets sick and she pitches in for him once and she finds that she loves it and she's really good at it because she, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, she had a show back in the '70s, Deborah Vince. Yeah. And I think this season is going to be her taking over that show, which I think is brilliant, and it takes it in new directions. And I'm really anxious to see. I've got the screeners for the whole season, and I really just want to watch them all, but I can't because I should do my homework. Got to eat my broccoli. I can't have candy all the time. And I finished my book, the Nantucket set, The Perfect Couple, which will soon be a Netflix limited series starring Nicole Kidman. It was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. It's another one of those apples never fall kind of things, Joey, where you think there's going to be I don't want to spoil it, but, I can't actually explain that reference without spoiling it, so I'm not going to. But
is that how you never see apples falling?
No, no, that's not it. It is a better book than Apples Never Fall, but it's the resolution suffers from a similar fate. So I'll just
okay.
Anyway, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3 M's, contributors Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Awards Daily, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.